You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Karen Dwyer Tesorero. This is, in some ways, a jaw-dropping story. I want you to think about some of the most dramatic news that you've ever heard in your life. Things that are not the death of a person or a natural disaster. But this story really could rival that. It's very dramatic, actually. So we talk about what happened with Karen's life, and we talk about what it felt like for her to live through it, how she worked through it, and came out the other side. So about this episode, I will tell you this. So Karen is a New Yorker. I grew up in New York City. If you were to be inside my noggin, my brain, as I record anything for this show or anywhere else, you would hear me reminding myself to slow down. There is never a person that has worked with me on my speaking who hasn't said, slow down, Amy. I know that lots of people put podcasts on fast play, 1.5 speed, maybe higher. I doubt that you're going to need to do that for this conversation. I think that she and I are both naturally quick talkers, and I have a feeling that we start out at a regular pace and accelerate from there. Enjoy it. It'll be fun. Stick it through to the end because Karen lives on Staten Island, and so I ask her about the movie and restaurant Nana's, which is super fun, and I also ask her about what she thinks about comedians buying an old Staten Island ferry. I think you are going to love this, so let's get to it. Karen Dwyer Tesorero, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I really am. I'm looking forward to this. Thank you for having me.
Oh, that's so good. All right, very good. I start every interview. Everybody's ready for this. What part of the world are you from?
New York City.
I love that. I grew up in New York City.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. What part of the city are you in?
Born and raised in Brooklyn and moved to Staten Island, but I work in Manhattan in the financial district.
Oh, spectacular. I grew up in Manhattan. I'm married to somebody who grew up in Brooklyn. So, you know, there's that. Very good. So that's not the topic of the day. And in a second, we're going to get to the topic of the day. But before I do, I have one more warm-up question, which is the saying is that laughter is the best medicine, right? So what is one thing that you can count on to pretty consistently make you smile or laugh?
It's my dog. He's a Velcro dog. He's 91 pounds and he comes and sits on my lap and demands all my attention. So he will knock the phone out of my hands if I'm working. He just loves my attention and he makes me laugh every time he does things.
I love that. We had a huge dog, by not huge, huge, but a big dog, officially medium size, like a Labrador when I was growing up, but it was about between 90 and 100 pounds. And my, there are two funny parts of this. My brother and I named this dog Squeaky when we were babies, when we were little kids. We weren't babies, but we were little. And that was ridiculous when it was an enormous dog bounding down the street. We're like, Squeaky, come here. And then as an adult, I like asked my dad and I was like, what in the world? Why did we have such a huge dog in a New York City apartment? And that was a weird conversation. I didn't question it when I was a kid, but when I was an adult, I was like, that was a lot of dog for a small space.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so much fun. I love that. So that's really good. The topic of the day, neither dogs nor siblings. The topic is we're going to talk about a time where you experienced a pretty significant financial reset or a situation. You realized that your mortgage hadn't been paid in 14 months. So we're going to talk about what happened before that. We're going to talk about the decisions you made to work your way out of that. And the first thing that I think would be helpful for me and everybody listening is to set the timetable. How long ago was it that this happened, that you realized that this was going on?
I found out about it in 2014, but it had obviously been happening the 14 months before then.
Okay. So, and this is like a true discovery, not a, yeah. I wasn't paying attention. I knew something was wrong, like ostrich, like, you know, not able to look at it.
Yeah. Well, what happened was at the time I was married and we had owned a business and I was working a full-time job And the sidekick to all this is that I'm a psychotherapist. So
Yes.
I was doing my private practice in the nights, in the evenings. So I was doing my two jobs, and we opened a business for my husband at that point to run. And I was leaving all the financial stuff for him to manage. So literally, I found out about it when I intercepted a call from our bank. That's literally, it was a Tuesday afternoon.
Wow. All right. So this story is taking a different turn than what I thought because I didn't realize there was like a spousal business type thing, so on and so forth. So you, I knew from your biography that you submitted that you were a psychotherapist. And so tell us more about what you said you had two jobs. So you were doing that in the evening and you were doing something else during the day. Tell us a little bit about that.
I was working in community mental health as a supervisor, and I was
Okay.
overseeing three programs there. So 25, I think, therapists under me that I was supervising. And then leaving there, going to private practice at night. My kids were small at that point, so I would come home at 10 o'clock at night. The kids would already be in bed. It was a very stressful time, and I was trusting him, you're going to manage the finances while I'm doing this stuff and bringing the money in.
Very, very cool. Okay, so the reason I initially thought of the question about profession is that there is this idea that if you have this is a psychotherapist is considered a professional job. Like so, and there's this idea that if you get a professional job, if you do the training, you get the master's and the doctorate and you do the things that equals financial security and affluence and adulthood. And it doesn't actually always work out that way. So I wanted to, so tell us a little bit more about what was going on behind the scenes that created this backlog in paying the bills.
Right. So I was working all these hours, and he started a business. We started a business together as a married couple. He was running that business, and he was going to handle the finances and the day-to-day with the kids and all that. And he was supposedly doing that. And then I started getting letters I was naive to this. I was getting letters where my mailman would come to the door and make me sign like
Yep.
green cards. FedEx was showing up. I had to sign for packages. And every time I signed for a package, I'd be looking, like trying to flip it over, figuring out what it was, looking at the green card, where this come from. It would magically, he'd come over and be like, oh no, I'm going to handle that, and pull the envelopes out of my hands. So one day I was home on a Tuesday, and the phone rang, and it was the bank again. And before he could get to the phone, I grabbed the phone, ran to my bedroom, and locked the door. So I was in the room by myself when I got on the phone with the bank. And the bank told me, like, this is Tuesday. Come Monday, we're taking you to court, and you're going to be responsible for all these fees, the back payments, everything. And when bill collectors call, they're not always the nicest people.
They are
And
not.
they have that attitude going. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you need to explain to me right now, like, I'm five. What is happening here? And at that point, the woman could hear it in my voice. I was crying. I was like, what do you mean I'm 14 months behind? Like, what are we talking about here? And when she heard that I didn't know what was going on, she slowed down, and she was able to like process everything with me. And she was like, the mortgage hasn't been paid in 14 months. If we have to take legal action, you're going to be responsible for all the legal fees and everything else. And we were probably on the phone for about 15, 20 minutes, and my world just ended at that point. Everything changed.
So people, some people who are listening to this are going to have run into stories like this in their life because it's not a story that's completely uncommon in relationships. And other people will hear this and be like, "Oh my gosh, no way! I would absolutely know that this was happening in my house." I have enough life experience that I know at least a couple people in my life who have been sandbagged by huge financial decisions within their family, revelations that really, really gobsmacked them from out of nowhere. So I believe you. I believe you. And I think you're lucky, if fortunate is a better word, that the person on the other end of the phone also took a second and believed you instead of just being like, nah, of course you know this is happening. How could you not?
Yeah, it was life-changing, that conversation. Because in that moment, when she realized I didn't know what I was saw, and I was so upset on the phone, and I was sobbing, like, please explain this to me. And she was just like, I'm so sorry, I have to be the one to explain this to you. And she went through it and told me what the next steps were. And at that point, I had to make incredible life decisions that just changed everything.
That is amazing. All right, so this takes place in your house.
Yes.
It's a weekday. You're Partner, your husband, are you guys still married?
Nope.
Okay, all right. So we'll get back
That
to
was one of
that.
those life decisions.
We will get back to that. I was definitely at desk. We'll get back to that. You're inside, you locked the door. You obviously had like a sneaky suspicion that he was keeping something from you based on his behavior. What was happening outside the door? Like, was he knocking on the door? Was he trying to get your attention? Like,
He was, I could hear him pacing outside the door. The kids were in the house. And when the phone call was over and I opened the door, he came in and closed the door. And I looked at him, and I am fortunate enough that I had this immediate reaction and I had this available to me. But I looked at him square in the face and I said, "They just told me 14 months of missed mortgage payments." And he went, "Yeah." And I said, "I'm going to go to my parents and ask them to help us with this. But if I go to them, we're getting divorced. Letting you know that right now." And he looks me square in the face and he goes, "You do what you have to do." So I packed up my kids, we got in the car, and we went to my parents' house. Hysterical crying, drove to my parents' house, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. And that was very out of character because I was always working these crazy hours. And my mom met me out in her driveway, and the kids ran into the house, and she knew I was upset, and she said, "What happened?" And I just looked at her, broke down, and said, "I'm getting divorced." And that was the conversation.
so what's super interesting to me, I'm not a therapist, but I coach families, I'm a trained mediator, is that you actually did something in that very first conversation with your husband, which is, as we are instructed to have these things, you stated a fact. It was not arguable. You said, "I was just told that XYZ." And that is how we are supposed to deal with high conflict things. But it's hard to do that. Even people who are trained in that don't always do it, you know. So, but that's, I mean, good job, Karen.
Thank
Good
you.
job. That was all of your training, like, played out right there. If you can summarize it, thinking back, because this is a while ago, this is more than 10 years ago. When you think back to that moment when you were on the phone in the room with your husband, getting the information, you're young. How old were your kids at this point?
About 11 and 9 in
11 and
that
9. So they're
range,
aware.
10
They're
and 8.
aware that something's going on. If you had to pick three or four words to describe how you felt in that sort of 2 hour period, what would you say?
Gut punched. I was devastated. The rug was out from under me. I didn't know what I was doing, how I was doing it, or what was going to come of this, but I knew my marriage was over, and I knew I had to take steps to I just didn't, the trust was gone at that point. I was like, we're just done.
So all right, okay. I have so many questions. All right, very, very good. Okay, so you said in the intake form, I'm going to try and stay on task because I could go way off on a tangent right now. My imagination is running wild. The way you said this on the intake form is that the courts seized your accounts. Tell me a little bit about what that means and what your day-to-day life was like when that happened.
So the mortgage payments was just the top of the iceberg as to what was happening financially. So he had that business that we had started, and he decided to walk away from that business. And we were in a lease where if we missed any lease payments, our personal assets were part of the lease.
Personal guarantee.
And because of that, when he walked away from that business, he literally pulled down the gate one day and never went back. And so when he did that, it turned out the landlord went to court to access that part of the lease where our personal accounts were responsible for the lease payment. And so the court seized all of our personal accounts, and there was a lien put on the house that now had 14 months of missed mortgage payments.
Okay, so let me see if I understand. So he started the business failed essentially. No judgment there. That's just so he did not talk to you about it. He didn't tell you the business had failed. He walked away from the business. The leaseholder, corporate landlords are aggressive people. Nor I mean, that's their business. They came after they enforced the contract. They enforced the contract, which you had personally guaranteed. They managed to do that with a court ruling without ever telling you.
Without ever telling me, they
Without ever
told
telling you. That's a
him.
little surprising. That's a little surprising. And so then this money was removed from your account. He's also in charge of the personal finances, which is a relationship agreement that you guys had. That's a spicy topic. And So there were you were defaulting on personal bills because there just wasn't any money left, and he didn't tell you. Wow, how long had you guys lived in the house?
We had this was his childhood home. His parents
Okay.
had given us the home in, when his mom was getting older, she was like, come live in the house. It was a two-family house in New York. She lived in the apartment. We lived in the bigger part of the house. And so he had been in that house pretty much essentially at this point, 45 years, something like that, 50
Yeah.
years. And then we moved our kids in like 2005. My younger son was born in 2006 and came home to that house. That was the only house he knew. And
Okay.
so it was just completely devastating at that point. Everything was.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. All right, so you get this news, Drama Central, you but you're just absolutely just but you immediately take action. You don't freeze.
I immediately took action. I immediately took action all around because that was the other part of this. My private practice had taken off. And the part of this was at this point, I was doing private practice full time. I was building it up slowly and I was taking my time, selecting what kind of clients I want to work with, working on my trainings. Like here I was, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing my private practice. Well, now I had to hightail it. And at one point, I was on the Staten Island Ferry, actually, going from Manhattan to Staten Island. And I had an epiphany moment where I just started crying. And my first thought on the ferry was, I'm going to have to give up my private practice and go back to agency work full time. But then I was like, but what do I do with my kids? I don't know how this divorce is going to play out. I don't know what I'm going to do with all this. And so here it is. Anyone knows the Staten Island Ferry? It's about a 20, 25-minute ferry ride. I'm on this ferry. And I was like, if I was a doctor, if I was a lawyer, or I was an accountant, nobody would tell me, give up your business and go back to work for somebody. I was like, so why, as a therapist, do I think I need to go back to agency work? Like, what about that? And I realized what was happening was I had all these negative thoughts about myself that I couldn't do it. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't going to accomplish anything. I wasn't going to be successful. And I really had to figure out on this ferry ride what my next step was. And I said, those negative thoughts really aren't true. I started looking at the clients I've had, how long I've been in the field, all the clients that have always given me positive feedback from other people that I work with. And when I started thinking of that, I was like, but I can do this. Like my negative thoughts are holding me back from being the best version of who I am. Why am I letting my negative thoughts and him do that to me? I'm not going to let that happen anymore. And I got off the ferry and I called my mom again. And I was like, I'm not going back to work. I'm going to take my practice and I'm going to do what I have to do. And me and my kids are going to be okay. And I got a litany of questions like, are you sure? That doesn't
Right.
sound right. Like, really? Like, what? And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. Just watch me do it. And all she said was, we have your back if you need us. That was all she said. And from that moment on, I took whatever clients I needed to. I got myself my divorce attorney. I talked to my divorce attorney about this. And I was like, I really want to make this practice work. And she's like, yes, keep the practice because it gives you more flexibility with the kids and the kids' schedule and everything else. She's like, I would tell you not to go back to agency work. You need to keep that practice going. And it was through that when I realized the negative thoughts that were holding me back in this whole mess. I was like, I'm not going to let this hold me back anymore. So I literally paid off every credit card in cash. I would literally go to every bank on Fridays with cash in my pocket and pay all the debts off. I literally would go to the store and get a money order and literally just pay the money order towards the credit card. I would call and follow up on the credit cards. Did you get my payment today? Yes, we got your payment. Yes, you're paying it off. By the time all was said and done, I paid off all of my share of the debt. And by the time the divorce was final, I was able to buy my own house.
That is amazing. That is amazing. So I have like sort of a practical financial question because one, we like to believe that marriage is about love and romance and family and stuff, but it is a financial agreement. And you like in mo it varies by state, but in most states, when the married couple is responsible for the debts, everybody's responsible. There's a tricky thing. And when this happens, where one person is creating debt and the other person has to, is a part of the thing. So how did that work out? And when you were talking about keeping the practice, I was like, that's a bold move because there's a chance that people would come after that.
Yes,
Yeah.
and it was very scary that because I had an professional limited liability company, that's
Okay.
the only thing that protected that bank account from the courts being able to seize that because I had
Which
my
is a reason you can't
PLLC.
commingle funds, friends. Everybody who's listened, do not commingle your funds. Never, ever, ever. Be sure you can prove it. Be sure you can prove it. All right. So that good job. All right. So there's this huge amount of debt that is happening. You've got a how long was it in between the fatal phone call and when you finished your divorce? Because this is not an instant process.
It was 5 years in New York.
Okay, 5 years.
We literally came up with the agreement and then it sat on a clerk's desk somewhere in New York State until the judge could sign off on it. And even then, they pushed back because the courts did not like our agreement. So we were getting calls from the attorney, like, the court wants you to amend this. The court, and I at one point I remember being on the phone with my attorney. And I was like, tell the courts to stay out of it. I just need the signature. Like,
All
I'm okay
right.
with this agreement. Let's just get it done.
So
And
you guys just came to an agreement. The lawyers got together. You guys drafted an agreement. Okay. It wasn't like and then they were like, "Oh, we're not sure." So you were able to separate. So you had were you able to separate your debt from the family debt, or how did you do that?
no, what we had to do was literally split the debt 50-50. So while we were still married and I started going to the bank every Friday, I kept every single receipt attached it to every single credit card. Like I have ADHD. I was keeping meticulous records so that when we got in front of the attorneys, I was like, I've already paid all of this debt. Like, when is he going to be held responsible to stand up and pay his part of the debt? And because I had all the financial records of how much I had paid off from my business, at that point, they negotiated it and then he was responsible for his. We did actually have to sell that house, and his share came from the proceeds from the sale of that house.
It's like we're like a mind meld. I was going to ask what happened to the house. I was going to
Yeah.
ask. So, because usually the house is the biggest asset in a family. So that's during this time you're living with your parents?
I lived with them for a short time and then I got an apartment for me and my boys.
Thank goodness for your parents.
Yes.
Thankfully they were there.
Yeah.
All right. So that is a very, very, very dramatic story. And what is the toughest conversation you had with any of the people that you had bills with?
this one makes me tear up. There was a credit card company and I went into the branch, I made my payment, and then I called from the parking lot and I was like, did you get my payment? And this I guess I thought it was a much bigger company than what it was, or I don't know if they had the records on the screen, but the woman turned around and she's like, Mrs. Tesserero, you call us every Friday. And every Friday, we tell you the payment takes 24 to 48 business hours to post. They're like, please stop calling us right after you make the payment because we have no new information for you. And I was like, but you don't understand. I have to pay this off. Like, I have to get this done. And she goes, you're doing the right thing. She's like, I see the payments you're making. She's like, you're paying the debt back. She's like, keep doing what you're doing, but just stop calling us every Friday afternoon. And that was probably the toughest conversation. I mean, there were conversations with the lawyers and conversations with my ex where he denied a lot of this. Conversations with my kids because he would tell my kids that I was at fault for the debt and my parents were supposed to take that lien off the house for my kids. And my parents were supposed to save the house. They were going to be responsible for paying the 14 months of missed mortgage payments. He didn't understand that he had responsibility in that.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
That went on for a while with my kids because my kids kept telling me, well, grandma's giving you money. Grandma's giving you money. And I was like, no, grandma's not. I'm working. And I would show my son, this is my business account. This is, the phone bill. Like, see how it's in the same name? And he was like, no, grandma's doing that. COVID actually changed that because my kids saw me pivot in a moment. Literally in New York, we went from Friday we were working until Monday we were shut down. Monday I was doing phone sessions. I knew nothing about virtual calls. I knew nothing about Zoom. I was on literal old school phone doing sessions with clients, trying to figure out how am I going to get my copays? How am I going to, what systems do I put in place with this? And through COVID, my kids were homeschooled. They saw me working. They saw me, okay, I got to go into the office. I have a client now. And they saw all of that happen that now they know. They're like, yeah, mom's always working. Mom's always paying the bills. Like and they're older now. They're 21 and 18 now. They know that, everything gets provided by me.
So it's so interesting because talking about money is something that some people do and other people don't do, and a lot of parents don't talk to their kids about money. And this is not a judgment. It's just it doesn't often. It's there are families where it doesn't come up, and being able to talk about money is like a power skill, right? Being able to talk about it is a power skill, and so it's such a gift that you had those conversations with your kids. I talk about money all the time and I don't have an issue with it. And years ago, my husband was like, Amy, you're a weirdo that you can do this. Most people don't talk about money. And I was like, I don't get it. And then I thought about it. I grew up, my dad was a freelancer. So we talked just exactly what you're talking about. We talked about money all the time, not with drama or anything like that. It was just a thing we had to talk about. Like, he was like, this is how we do it, and this is where the money is, and this is when we pay this. And so for me, I don't get super emotional about it. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, it's fine to explain to people about money because, and it is different. Like I grew up in the 70s, it is different. People didn't have a lot of credit. It was harder to get credit. What happened? Speaking of credit, so your accounts were seized. You stayed on top of the bills. Did you have any credit penalties for you as a person? Like, did
Oh,
your credit?
absolutely. My credit was in the lowest you could possibly get. Like it was really bad. And literally, I had the money from the sale of the house, and I was like, okay, this is. I think of it as this is for my kids. Like I have to provide them safety. I have to provide them stability. I know that as a therapist that that's what kids need. So to me, the best way to do that was to provide them with another house. Like I was like, they need a home that they know is theirs, that they could kind of get used to and reestablish the safety. And so a friend of mine came with me and we went house hunting. I had a real estate agent who was phenomenal. She was involved in the sale of the house. She knew what was going on. And she took me out and we went looking at fixer uppers. And on Staten Island, it's a very high cost of living area. It's an expensive area. We found a townhouse that no contractors wanted because it was a townhouse. It was attached on both sides. It needed a ton of work, but the work was mostly cleaning. It had cigarette smoke damage in it. It smelled really bad. It looked really bad, but nobody wanted to touch this house. So because of that, I got a deal on it in New York. And I was able to use my money for a down payment. And me and my kids were there for about 7 or 8 years before we sold that and moved where we are now.
That's spectacular. I have two Staten Island questions that I'm going to bring up in a second, but because they're not actually related to the topic, they're just totally just Staten Island things. But okay, so what support resources did you have or did you discover as you went through this process? Because I'm going to guess, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you didn't have all of the knowledge about how to dig yourself out of this, financially speaking, and the understanding about how debt and credit and payoffs and all of these things worked when it happened. So how did who helped you through this?
Quite a few people. So first of all, the person who sent me home on that Tuesday afternoon was actually my therapist, my psychotherapist. Like he looked at me and I was in session with him that Tuesday and he was like, why are you here now if all this is going on? He's like, you need to go home and be there and see exactly what's happening. He was like, just leave, like go. Go, and I was in Manhattan and I left the building. The bus was right there, the express bus. Got on the express bus, got home, and literally 10 minutes later, that call came in from the bank. So he sent me home that day. So he was instrumental in the whole thing, supporting me through all of this. My parents, I could not, I am blessed that they were available and able to help me and to get me through all of this because they were just supporting us in whatever way. And they didn't have necessarily the knowledge to kind of help me. They were just like, We're here to help you watch the kids if you need us. We'll sign off. Like they did help get that 14 months, so we didn't go that foreclosure process. They were able to
Okay.
financially help us with that. We did pay them back every red cent of that at the closing for the first house. That got paid back to them. So we knew like that was a big help for me. The other big help was friends of mine who stepped up, like that house that was renovated. I put it out on Facebook. Like, anybody know anything about cigarette smoke on the wall? Like, anyone know anything about putting tiles up on a wall? And people were sending their husbands to help me. So I had all my friends and their husbands in, like, work crews, and they did the tile work for me. We did the cleanup, and they got the house ready for me and my kids. They really helped us. So we did a lot of that kind of work, the physical work of like, I could do tile. I know someone who could do painting. I could lay a floor. It all worked out. So that worked.
That is really great. It must have felt like a blessing and also a pretty heavy weight when your parents stepped in and guaranteed the mortgage.
Huge, huge
Yeah.
weight, huge weight. I knew at that point we were going to get divorced. I knew that with that lien on the house, because that lien was still,
Yeah.
that was accumulating 18% interest every single day.
Ugh.
So, every single day. And I didn't even know that till we were already through the process and like settling and ready to close on the house. And then when they got the settlement statement, that's when I saw the 18%, because I again had asked my soon-to-be ex, is this accumulating interest? Because everyone was in my ear that lien is creating interest, and I was so naive. I was like, no, he's telling me no. And they're like, you believe him? And I still believed him at that point. And it wasn't until the closing papers came in and it said 18% interest per day. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
It probably
It's
didn't just say 18%. It was the table. It was like, here's the amount and here's how much we're charging you, which is like such a painful thing. It's like, ouch.
And that came right off the top of the closing. My lawyers, I had my real estate lawyer there. I had my divorce, and not the real estate agent, and they and the real estate agent and the divorce attorney were talking on the phones, and they were like, this is what's getting paid out to that. Everything went through the attorney's escrow account, so that when we walked out of there, everything was paid off from the sale of the house. From my end, everything was paid off.
Wow, did that feel like a relief?
That felt like a relief. But it set off into another whole realm of financial trauma, because then after that, up until about 3 years ago, every single day I checked every single account at least 10 times a day. It was the first thing I did when my eyes opened in the morning and the last thing I did at night. I would log in and check every single credit card balance, every checking account balance, every business account, every retirement account. I was checking every balance all the time.
And that was because you had had the wool pulled out from underneath you, and so it made it for that period of time, you were checking it because it was comforting that you had the information. No one was going to surprise you. Okay. I can understand that, because one of the things that people do say with money is like, it's a sign of fear, like not fear or uncertainty, or but something to watch out for. If you're not willing to check your accounts, when you're scared to look in the accounts, or you don't know what the accounts are, that's a thing that's like, it's like, well, why is that? Why don't you know? Like, what are you, you know, it's not like an end all be all thing, but it's like, hey, what's the reason? You know, what's the reason? Like, are you afraid? Is somebody else in charge? Did you lose your password? Whatever. So those kind of things. Okay. Sometimes what we think in the moment is very, very different than when we look back 10 years in the future, right? Like, things will feel like they're huge, and 10 years later, we're like, oh, that was nothing. I don't think this is ever going to feel like nothing. But when you look back on this event and like the 2 years maybe before it or whatever, what are some of the things that you look back and you're like, you know what? There were some times here where I wish I could have made different decisions. What were some of the things that you wish that you had pushed on or paid more attention to? Or what are the things that you look back and you're like, oh, because I got nothing about after it happened. It seems like you rolled out you were on fast forward action taking. But beforehand, when you look back, what do you wish?
What I do with my clients, and I tell my clients this all the time, and especially if I'm working with couples, put aside 10 to 30 minutes every single week and touch base with your partner, your spouse, about finances. And not just enough of like, oh, I have it covered. Oh, don't worry about that. But no, I want to sit down. I want to know the checking account. I want to know the passwords. I want to know the credit. I want to know what credit card, what bill. I want to know what stocks, what investments we're making, what are our financial goals that we're working towards together, and sit together and go over that 10 to 20 minutes, half an hour every week. Sunday nights are a beautiful night for that. Sit down, kids are in bed, do that because so many women rely on their partners for their finances, and it can wind up getting you in a heap of trouble.
Oh,
And
yeah,
it was
absolutely.
devastating,
Yeah.
devastating. And I still see women do this, and it's just it cringeworthy. I'm like, please don't rely on them that way. And it's not to say not to trust your partner, but you have to be aware anything could happen. They could go out and get hit by a bus tomorrow, and you have no access to anything because you just don't know. You need that information to live. Just as if you know about your kid's dentist appointment and know the, your kid's like health history, you should know your finances like this.
Yeah. This is actually like so I learned this from somebody who is a divorced financial analyst. This is just phrasing. Like so, and she called it the car accident conversation. She's like, you know, people don't make this about trust, but if one of you is su surprisingly catastrophically injured, what is the information that the other person needs to have? And it shouldn't be a secret. It should be accessible. There should actually be somebody outside of the family that knows where, or the house that knows where it is, like your parents, your aunt, your uncle, whatever. It is a really important thing for people to do. Same thing. Most people don't do it, so people should put it on their to-do list. What that is a really, really good thing. The other fun name I've heard for that is people will call it money church. And they're like, once a week set up, it doesn't have to be on Sunday, but money church, call it your money church and go from there. So when you worked with a divorce attorney, did you also work with accountants and debt restructurers or anything like that?
Nope, I didn't do any of that. I did it all on
Okay.
my own. I had, like I said, I had a lot of good friends around me. I had
Yeah.
one friend who worked in finance and worked, his degree was in accounting, and he was just like, what are you
Okay.
doing now? What are you paying now? Like,
Okay.
pay this next. And he just kind of helped me get structured so that I knew what I was doing and gave me the plan. And then every once in a while, I'd check back and be like, this is where I'm at. And he'd be like, all right, keep going with this. And then, like, my real estate agent, like I said, she helped me. The mortgage guy, when he looked at my credit, he was like, the only thing that's going to help you right now is time. He was like, that's the only thing, is like everything's paid off. You have no debt. He's like, you just need time right now. And so, like, having that advice and just making sure now I know if I put $20 on my credit card, it's paid off the next day. Nothing lingers anymore. I'm debt
Yeah.
free at this point, other than my new mortgage. And I just make those payments. Everything's on auto payment. I check it. I know the money's there. I'm relying on myself right now for that. And it just works.
I love that. All right, that's very good. That's very, very good. Okay, so my Staten Island questions
Yes.
that I want to ask. Have you seen that movie that's out on Netflix now, Nana's? Do you love
I
it? Do you like Staten Island? So that the restaurant is on, the real restaurant is Staten Island too, right?
Yes, it is.
All
Yep.
right. I thought it
Yep.
was very cute.
It was very cute. I have not been to that particular restaurant, but I did see the movie. It was very cute. Very typical Staten Island.
Very cute. The other Staten Island question I have for you is, what do you think about Pete Davidson and Colin Jost buying a Staten Island ferry?
You know, I don't follow a lot of the big celebs, so I
Okay.
know that he's there.
Do you
I
know they
know
did
he was with
it?
Kardashian for a while. It's interesting because most people, when they ask about the Staten Island, they ask about Mob Wives and Jersey Shore because
Okay.
they
Yeah,
love
but fair enough.
Staten
Fair enough.
Island too. So I just kind of I honestly don't have the bandwidth to kind of pay attention to that stuff. So it's like,
Fair.
okay,
It's
yeah.
hilarious that, like, so apparently they bought a ferry. Like, it was like they saw like a thing that was like, does anybody want to buy a ferry? And they bought it. And I'm like, who does that? Who's gonna buy a ferry? Anyway, I just think that's really funny. Like, so anyway, but it's a sign that you were living a full and complete life that you don't pay attention to things like that. So that is very, very good. If you could go back and meet a much younger version of yourself, way before you even got married, when you were about 15 years old, what would you tell her that might play into this whole scenario of going in a different direction?
Don't believe the negative thoughts. Dare to
I
believe in
love it.
yourself.
I love that. I love that. Would actually,
The
they're giving.
negative thoughts hold you back. They have so much power, and it takes just as much energy to have positive thoughts about yourself and to believe in yourself than it does have the negative thoughts. So switch that and have the positive thoughts.
I love that. One of the things I love about this story is that it's very dramatic, the experience that you went through, but it does absolutely exemplify the idea that I have, which is that many, many people do not have the linear path through life that they think they're going to have. And most people make it through. And we need examples to hear from other people having made it through, because then when we run into our own little hiccups, we're like, all right, this is actually not the end of the road. Like my work here is to figure out my way through. So the very, very good. Okay. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to tell people what you do, and how they can connect and follow you online after the show.
Sure. So I'm Karen Dwyer Tesserero. I'm a psychotherapist in New York City, and I'm approved to offer telehealth services in Florida. And I also offer life coaching, so to serve all the other states. So the best way to reach me, the easiest email I have is Karen@coffeewkaren.com. So coffeewithkaren.com. And that's my life coaching email. And people can reach out to me there.
Very nice. Excellent. So you've got that covered. You have a special offer for the audience, which I'm going to share, which is that it's a 1 hour personal life coach session for free with a coupon code. And the coupon code is in the show notes. And also the best way to get these codes and all of this information, like the email and all of the links and so on and so forth, is to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I email it to you when the episode comes out and you have it right in your email box. You just click it. If you're on the treadmill, if you're running, if you're on a ferry or a train somewhere, you don't have to worry about writing it down or going back and finding it. It's in your email box. Perfect for busy people and all of those things. Now, let's get back to our conversation. Karen, I'm going to ask you three questions. Are you ready for the final for three questions?
Sure. Absolutely.
I love this. These are just for fun. All right. Is there a book that you have enjoyed enough to read more than once? And if so, will you share with us what the title is?
I am a huge John Grisham fan. I love his books. I find them very easy to read. So I'm old school, probably The Firm. There's a line in there about how he stopped short and FBI agents and criminals like came out through his nose. I thought that was hysterical. So John Grisham all the way.
I love that. There is at some point I had a teacher, like a very academic highbrow, like, you know, literature writing type person who like poo-pooed John Grisham. He's like, was not actually, you know, such an amazing writer, but even he was like, but he tells a really good story.
Absolutely.
They're page turners.
Yeah, I love his books.
I do too. I do too. And the movies are good too. The movies are good too. Sorry. What's a food that you will almost always say yes to eating? It can be a meal, a snack, a treat, anything.
Chocolate, ice cream.
Very
anything
nice.
Like that. Yeah. I'm a big ice cream person. Chocolate ice cream is my favorite. Absolutely.
Very, very good. I once had a friend who did not like chocolate. And I remember when she told me, I was like, I don't even understand that sentence. I've since met several other people that don't eat chocolate, and I like realized that it was just my perspective, but I remember my total awe. I was like, what do you mean? All right. So when you look back over your life so far, what would you say is the riskiest decision that you actually made? And did it feel risky to you at the time?
Oh, there were so many. Starting my business, getting my divorce, starting another business, leaving my husband without any of this figured out. That was all risky. But it felt like I had no choice. And I've been told by many people that I'm pretty gutsy, that they're like, they tell me that they're in awe of me and the things that I do. Like I make a decision and I just run with it. And so I don't even think I realize sometimes that things are as risky as other people might think they are. I'm just like, oh, this is what I'm doing now.
Well, I think that your story is representative of that, that you were like, this is it. Like I'm lying in the sand. This is what I'm doing. And that's it. All right. That's it. Karen, thank you for being such an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.